Members, we have a lot of bills in front of us. We're going to get started with Representative Lewick. Does that work, Representative Lewick, with your bill? We will not be in an official committee meeting until we do get quorum, but if we can get started, that'll give us a better shot at getting done on time. Representative Lewick, welcome to the committee, and please introduce your TIF bill, or actually local option sales tax bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This morning, House File 3538 asks to simply change the process for gaining a local use sales tax, basically speed it up for the Garrison, Cathio, Mille Lacs Lake Sanitary District. It would in no way change the requirements to get a voter referendum or the standard process. It simply would lay out in statute, assuming the November voter referendum passes, the ability to implement that local use sales tax as soon as possible. And the reason that the sanitary district is asking for this is they're under a significant financial stress. This is a relatively new sanitary district, been in operation about 7 years. The board of managers there are basically a new crew, and they're doing their best to stabilize this process. Looking forward, and here's some of the recommendations that they have from their financial advisors as to what they face and why they're asking to put this referendum in front of the voters and develop this local use sales tax as soon as possible. A couple of options that they're also looking at, and that is they have a local property tax levy authority there. They're currently levying an increase, annual increase of 4% a year. In order to stabilize this funding situation, they're now looking at a 9% annual increase if they just did that over the next 6 years. The other route would be an 8% increase on the ratepayers annually for the next 6 years. Because of Mille Lacs Lake area, this little strip of land in the northwest part of Mille Lacs, it basically borders 169 from Garrison down for the casino, is a huge tourist area. So it looks like about 60% of the toilet flushes there are done by our guests, our tourists, and so this local use sales tax would help stabilize the situation. Plus, it would share the cost. What we're trying to do is make sure that we continue to improve the water quality around Mille Lacs Lake. We're talking 500 customers out there. It's a very small sanitary district. With that, Mr. Chair, in the interest of time, I would stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. Representative Quam has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since we have a quorum present, I'd like to move the minutes.
Let's call the meeting to order first. The chair will call the meeting of the Property Tax and Local Government Finance Division to order. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the minutes.
The minutes of the April 13th meeting have been moved for approval. Any additions, corrections, or discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of approving the minutes from the April 13th meeting, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion passes. The minutes are approved as presented. Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Quam also moves consideration of House File 3538 and then to be laid over. And so I think we're up to speed, members. Other questions for Representative Lewick on his local option sales tax bill? Okay, Representative Lewick, thank you. Any final thoughts?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I just want to assure you I've got all the resolutions. This sanitary district is not coming here asking for any money from anybody. They're just asking for assistance in being able to get to that local use sales tax as soon as possible without any delay. They've already got agreement with the townships, the city of Garrison, full support for this. So simply a matter of of trying to move this forward as fast as possible. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. And with that, the chair does lay over House File 3538. Okay, who's here next? Is Representative Schoen here? Okay, I don't see him. How about Representative Smith? Representative Smith is here. Representative Smith, welcome to the Property Tax Committee. And Representative Vogel will move consideration of House File 2630 to then be laid over. Representative Smith.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, good morning. House File 2630 deals with some changes to an existing TIF from a few sessions ago. And I have one change I'd like to offer orally, and then there are some additional technical changes that we can talk through that aren't in the bill dealing with the existing project. The first item is on line 2.24. Line 2.24. I would like to add the language, and I can submit this to staff afterwards, Mr. Chair, but add the language, and may include any additional property necessary to cause the property included in the tax increment financing district to consist of complete parcels. There's some parcel boundary cleanup that speaks to. I have delighted to have the mayor and my city administrator here with us today to offer some additional testimony.
Okay, Representative Smith, do you have that language we can get to staff here?
I do. I don't have it in a format.
What you just read from is perfect.
Awesome.
If you could have, can we have staff or somebody bring that up? In the meantime, why don't we have your testimony and then we can come back to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Chair, could we have a repeat of that language? I missed it.
All right, we'll address it right now since Representative Erickson has it. Wants to deal with that.
It's the highlighted.
Mr. Michael will help us here as soon as the microphone gets back to
going. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the amendment would read on page 2, line 24, after the word paragraph, insert, and may include any additional property necessary to cause the property included in the tax increment financing district to consist of complete parcels.
And thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Smith and Mr. Michael, what does that mean? What does that mean for your bill?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, essentially what that means is that if there is a parcel that overlaps the boundary of this meets and bounds definition that's in the special law, that the city then could include the entire area of the parcel in the tax increment district, they would not require the property tax administrators to split the parcels based on the meets and bounds definition that's in the special law.
Sounds rather technical. Is there a motion to adopt? Actually, Representative Kosnick moves the oral amendment that Representative Smith presented. Any discussion on the oral amendment? Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the oral amendment just presented, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. That oral amendment is adopted. Representative Smith, and please introduce your guests.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, member of the committee, I'm Mark Stephenson. I'm the mayor of Maple Grove. It's my pleasure here today. As Representative Smith noted, this is a previous established TIF district that was created a couple of years ago in the gravel mining area in Maple Grove. And really what we're here today to do is to get a clarification and a couple of language corrections in this bill so that the TIF district can be functional as anticipated when it was passed a couple of years ago. Really, as mentioned, we have the one that was already addressed, which has to do with a property line issue that was raised. And I think the other issue really has to do with conforming some language involving the soil correction issues that will then correspond to language that was passed, I think, in relation to a TIF district for Burnsville in their gravel mining area, and a similar one that related to Apple Valley. And with me today is also our city administrator, Heidi Nelson. I'll have her talk to those issues.
Thank you, Mayor Stephenson. Ms. Nelson, welcome.
Chair Gostkowski, members of the committee, my name is Heidi Nelson. I'm the city administrator for the city of Maple Grove. As Representative Smith and the mayor have outlined, the city did receive this special legislation in 2014. The purpose of the special legislation was to provide a tool for the city to deal with development efforts in the gravel mining area. Many of you may be familiar with that area. It's bounded by 694 on the south, 169 on the east, and then abuts up to the commercial areas that are currently existing within Maple Grove. At this point in Maple Grove's development, our focus is really on job creation and industry. Pretty much from a commercial perspective, from a retail perspective, those components of development have been completed in Maple Grove. In addition, the housing that occurs in Maple Grove is pretty much market driven. So our purpose in utilizing this TIF is really about job creation and industry. The two amendments that you have in front of you today, one of them deals with adding the language all or a portion thereof. I think what this reflects is the changing nature of the soils and the conditions in the gravel mining area, and allows us the opportunity to shrink the project area for the special legislation based upon those changing conditions. In addition, when the original legislation was drafted, it followed land use lines versus parcel boundary lines, and so we need to have that amendment made. We were able to get an additional amendment in front of the Senate Tax Committee, and that reflects what the mayor referred to with regard to allowing for public improvements to be paid or funds to be utilized from the TIF to pay for public improvements, whether they're related to the soil deficiency or not, just public improvements in general, which is the tool that we're seeking. I believe those amendments, and I'll let the representative clarify, but I believe those amendments would be submitted if this bill were to be laid over, and then considered in the next step of the legislation. But we were able to get that into the Senate version, and it was laid over for consideration there. So with that, I'd be happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Nelson. Ms. Nelson and Representative Smith, can you just, I don't think we need to really act on those, that difference that the Senate has, but can you just tell us what it is? Because our purpose here today is really kind of to vet each of these, and there's, you know, I mean, who knows what's going to happen with the tax bill, but there are TIF provisions in the tax bill. There's TIF provisions in front of us. If the Senate and House conferees have agreement on some of these, they could eventually end up in that tax bill. And so it would be instructive for us to know what those differences are. Representative Smith.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. Yes, Ms. Nelson will walk through walk through all of the changes.
Thank you. Ms. Nelson.
Chair, members of the committee, the additional amendments would deal with that there's a language that talks about acquiring parcels on which improvements are to occur, and it talks about whether they're inside or outside the district but within the project area. So we'd be seeking the authority to utilize tax increment for land acquisition, whether it was inside the district and inside the project area, so providing that flexibility to spend those funds within the project area. In addition, it would allow for infrastructure to be funded with the tax increment, whether it was related specifically to the correction of the soil deficiency or just in general for the provision of public infrastructure. So it provides that flexibility to really address kind of the development needs in the gravel mining area. And again, this is similar to language that's been provided to other soil deficiency districts in Burnsville and Apple Valley. It just helps us strengthen the tool a bit. I think the challenge comes when you're dealing with a significant infrastructure project, whether it be storm or sewer, water, road. You know, how do you parse out what's really related to that soil deficiency versus the provision of infrastructure? So we're looking for that flexibility to be able to utilize the tax increment for both the land and the infrastructure with a bit more flexibility.
Thank you, Ms. Nelson. Questions? Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Ma'am, could you explain a little bit more what you mean by correcting a soil deficiency?
Ms. Nelson.
Chair, members of the committee, so the gravel mining area is basically a gravel pit. And so we have areas where we have material stored in big piles, and then we have areas where there's more holes in the land. And so I think the purpose of the Soil Deficiency District was to provide assistance to cities via the tax increment vehicle to be able to pay for those costs associated with either moving the soils, correcting the soils if the soils were deficient for construction purposes, or filling in areas that are depressed because of the gravel mining activity.
Representative Anderson.
Well, yeah, thanks again, Mr. Chair. So the question would be, wouldn't the gravel mining companies reclaim that on their own?
Ms. Nelson.
Chair, members of the committee, yes, in essence, the gravel mining companies are doing some of that work, but it adds to the cost of redevelopment. And so that's, I think, the piece that we're trying to solve here is because the challenge of the development that we're seeking at this point is really about industry and job growth, there's some market conditions there that we need some assistance in bringing down those infrastructure costs and those soil correction costs in order to facilitate that development.
Thank you. Other questions, members? Representative, I thought Representative Hertas. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to add to Representative Anderson's comment. I'm very familiar with the area, and when you mine out these areas in order to bring them back up to grade for construction purposes, the soil compaction and the density has to meet minimum requirements, not only for building on and making sure that the millions of dollars that will be invested on top of it don't sink away, but even for mortgage purposes, you know, they need to have it certified that the land is capable of being built on. So as it was articulated, the market conditions don't necessarily provide for even the owner of the property to do all of that and bring it back up to grade to sell it. It would be spending more money than the land is worth.
Thank you, Representative Hertas. Other questions, members? Final comments or discussion, Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, members, we appreciate your support for this. And again, this is some changes from the 2014 or 2013 bill, and we appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Mayor Stephenson and City Administrator Nelson.
Thank you.
Have a great day. With that, House File 2630 is laid over. Representative Earhart looks to be at the ready. Representative Lean moves House File 2401 to be laid over. Representative Earhart, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is an extension of a TIF bill that was passed in 2014, and in order to take effect, the city needed to file the certificates with the Secretary of State before January 2015. And they failed to do so, as I noticed several other certificates by other cities did not get passed, did not get certified. So in any event, this is asking for an extension on the bill to December 2016. Mr. Chairman, there is an amendment here as well, if you...
Okay, we do have an amendment, Representative Earhart, the A1 amendment. Representative Anderson moves the A1 amendment. Representative Earhart, can you describe it for us?
Well, Mr. Joel,
Mr. Michael will describe the A1 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, members of the division, as Representative Earhart indicated, what happened was that A special law was passed in 2014 for the city of Edina. The city council did the local approval, but the city clerk failed, or whoever the staff person at the city failed to file it with the certificate of approval with the Secretary of State, which is the final requirement in the local approval statute. The city, though, apparently has gone ahead and taken actions as if the law was in place, and this was discovered. And what Representative Earhart's amendment does is simply to say that any actions that the city took under the law after it approved it would be validated, even though that this approval isn't filed until the law occurs. So it's essentially what the amendment does is to validate city's actions that were taken after the law was approved by the council, but I think probably unknowing, the council did not know that this final administrative step had not been taken.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Representative Earhart?
Mr. Chairman, the Senate already passed the amended version, so.
Okay, with that, any discussion on the amendment? Members, all in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Earhart, you have testifiers.
I look around here, and unless I see them, I don't.
Okay.
They're thinking that it was next week, I think. So.
Okay. Any questions, members, for the bill as amended? Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just curious, it says that normally this would be 40% low-income housing, and it looks like this was done at 20%. Just curious why that difference is allowed.
Representative Earhart?
Mr. Chairman, we asked me that again. Normally, what did you say?
Mr. Chair and
Representative.
Well, in the bill summary, it says that under the law, only 20% of the units required to be low-income housing as opposed to 40% under general law. I know we're not maybe just going back and rediscussing the TIF the way it was set up in the first place, but it just begs a question why there was a deviation there, and if that is to continue, I guess now would be the time to question it when we're giving an exception.
Mr. Michael, Ms. Dalton? Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Vogel, that the reason why the legislature originally enacted this special law for Edina was to help the city develop this sort of affordable housing in the city, and because of, if my recollection is that the expense and the difficulty of doing the development just did not make it financially feasible to do the same percentage of low-income units that are required by the general law. And so the city came to the legislature and requested this essentially deviation from the general law rule that would require the 40% as you see in the bill summary. And so the 2014 legislature decided to do that. There's some additional complications involved with the development that were involved in this. If this is the person from the city, he's probably better able to explain the rationale for it than I am.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. With that, we have with us, sir, please introduce yourself. And
you probably don't get to say it. Mr. Chairman, unless there are other questions, I don't want to tax my witness's memory here.
Okay. Well, Representative Earhart, would you like him to talk about the bill?
Mr. Chairman, my question is, do we have to talk about this anymore? Unless you have curiosity about what's going on.
We have a curious committee, Representative Earhart.
You have a serious what?
We have a curious committee. And a serious committee.
What am I doing in front of this committee? If you want further testimony, we can do it. But it's such a
does your guest here testify? Does he know about the 20% versus 40% that Representative Vogel was asking about? Please introduce yourself.
Yes,
for the record, sir.
Yes, good morning. My name is Bill Neundorf. I'm with the City of Edina. I'm the city's economic development manager. And I apologize for coming in halfway here. So could I hear the full question?
The question was dealing with a 20% threshold versus 40% threshold for low-income housing that was in the original special legislation. Do you know why that happened? That was Representative Vogel's question. Mr. Neundorf.
I was not intimately involved with that legislation, but I was certainly aware of it. The challenge had been that in the City of Edina, we were highly successful in delivering luxury apartment units. We've had great success in the Southdale area, really transforming that area with new market rate housing. The struggle came in delivering the affordable projects. We had tried working with our developers that had been coming in. No one was willing to do a 40% project. In order to make the projects work with the land cost and the construction costs and the labor costs, we sought the special legislation to see if there was a way that we could deliver affordable units at a at a level that was, I'll say, attractive to developers, but at a level where developers were willing to do it. So that's why we pursued the special legislation initially. Why we settled at 20% rather than 25 or 32, that was a number that was discussed at the committees at the time. I don't know why 20 was decided upon versus a number slightly more or slightly less.
Thank you, Mr. Neundorf. Representative Vogel?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Earhart or Mr. Neundorf, anything else you'd like to say about the bill? Thank you for coming today. Mr. Neundorf, did you have something?
I was just going to mention that after we received the special legislation, the City Council did take all the steps that were required, held the local hearings again, passed the resolutions, did all the public notice, et cetera. What we forgot to do was mail a photocopy of all of our work to the Secretary of State's office. At the urging of your colleagues in the Senate, we did mail that photocopy earlier this week just to get it in there. So we're asking to do what we were given authority to do back in 2014. No more, no less. So we'd ask your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Neundorf. Anyone else like to testify for or against this bill? Okay, any questions, members? All right, thank you. Representative Earhart, final comments.
No, I just want to thank you for the lengthy time I was in front of your committee. I'm sorry we took so much time, but thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Representative Earhart, you always bring humor to the committee. Thank you for that. And with that, the chair lays over House File 2401. Representative Mason, House File 3202. Representative Pinto moves House File 3202 to be entertained and then laid over. Representative Mason, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for hearing House File 3202, its legislation for the City of Burnsville. It involves a substantial portion of property that presents a great opportunity for both the community and the state. Mayor Elizabeth Kautz is here to provide some of the details.
Thank you, Representative Mason. Mayor Kautz, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Elizabeth Kautz, Chair and members. I'm the mayor of the City of Burnsville. And I thank you so much for the opportunity to speak before you this morning on House File 3202. And I want to thank Representative Mason for her support and for authoring the bill for us. And firstly, I want to thank all of you for partnering with us in 2008 and giving us the authority and the legislation to create TIF districts in this area that is very difficult for us. It's 1,700 acres. It's in an area of Burnsville that is bounded by 35W. And to the west, to the border of Savage, from 13 to the Minnesota River quadrant. Our comprehensive plan calls for the redevelopment of this area, which is really heavy industrial use. And also we have two landfills, a mining activity, and it's a place where we have great opportunities, not only for our community, but for our school district and for the state. So we're here before you in part because of the 2008 legislation, and then there were also factors that were beyond our control called the recession. And so with the ability to establish TIF districts through a specified deadline of 2018, the unfortunate part for us is that the recession did delay many redevelopment activities, resulting in our need to prolong the development time frame of the Minnesota River Quadrant. And so, Mr. Chair and members, we're requesting changes that will allow us and the property owners and the banking institutions and so forth to develop smaller parcels bordering Highway 13 by adding development districts as a type of TIF district. Secondly, extend the deadline for establishing TIF districts from 2018 to 2023, giving more time to accommodate redevelopment needs. So far, only one district has been established, and that is TIF number 7. Thirdly, extend the time for qualified activity on a parcel from 4 years to 9. This will allow more time to continue addressing much-needed soil remediation impacted parcels. And lastly, sir, provide the city the ability to delay receipt of tax increment up to 8 years after the creation of the district, giving the city more time for development to occur before the first increment is collected. It is expected that the redevelopment of the Minnesota River Quadrant will be about a 15 to 20 year endeavor. However, we are hopeful that this redevelopment process will add up to 2,000 more jobs in the area, significantly increasing the tax base, benefiting not only the city of Burnsville, our school district, our county, but the state. We think about not only property tax increase, but income tax increase that will benefit all of us, the state and our schools. And I thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for your consideration. We're a partner. We work together for the economic vitality of our state.
Thank you, Mayor Coutts. Questions for either Mayor Coutts or Representative Mason on the bill? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mayor, is your school district in favor of this extension?
Mayor Coutts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Anderson, the school district is in favor of the work that we're doing, but they did not, according to this, have to have a letter of approval for this one.
Representative Anderson.
But if you like, I can certainly get one, sir.
Well. Well, Mr. Chair, no, I was just curious because it would affect the receipts like the other local taxing districts receive as well. So if they're on board, that's good.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Other questions? Okay. Representative Mason, closing comments? Okay.
This property has great potential. We'd appreciate your consideration and your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mason and Mayor Coutts. With that, the chair lays over House File 3202.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mayor.
Appreciate it.
Representative Schoen, House File 2765 is next. And Representative Joaquin moves House File 2765 to be laid over. Representative Schoen, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you, Representative you, Joaquim, and how many other ways we say it right on this in this body?
Did I say it wrong, Representative?
Please say Joaquim.
Hey, it's just rolling right off my tongue.
You were about as close as most people ever get, Mr. Chair.
Representative Schoen.
So, I know you've got a lot of work to do, and we'll work very hard to be brief. Mr. Chair and members, you've got a handout that discusses a project down in Newport, Minnesota. It's right on the border of Ramsey, Dakota, and Washington County at 494 and 61. And this is kind of taken our county and area into a new direction with the county developing a HRA, Housing and Redevelopment Authority, and doing a little more work in various ways that haven't been done before. And we're working really hard to bring development and jobs to the area in a somewhat challenged area of the city and the county, just from what other industry surrounds it and across the river and into Ramsey County as well. So I have the mayor of Newport, Mayor Garrity, and then the HRA director from Washington County here as well, and I'll let them give you a brief description of what this is, because I know it's magical and you're going to love it.
Thank you, Representative Schoen. Mayor Garrity, welcome. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, I'm Tim Garrity, the mayor for the city of Newport. I want to thank Representative Schoen for introducing the legislation for us and the committee for hearing the bill. The city of Newport is a relatively small community of about 3,500 residents. Redevelopment of the Red Rock Crossing is important to the continued vitality of the city and the only significant way to add businesses and residents. Red Rock Crossing is about 188 acres located in the city of Newport, south of I-494, north of 15th Street, and between the Mississippi River and Highway 61. Our city does not have the staffing capacity or the financial resources to accomplish these goals, so we have entered into a joint powers agreement with the Washington County HRA. I'm excited to work with the Washington County HRA to rejuvenate the area into transit-oriented, mixed-use development along the Red Rock Corridor. By working together, we have a great opportunity to build on the area's assets. It's close, its location on the Red Rock Corridor, visibility from I-494 and Highway 61, close proximity to the airport, St. Paul, and regional employment centers. It's direct link to the Mississippi River parks and trails. We will only be successful, though, if we work with the private sector. The Newport Transit Station is an amenity which the private sector can leverage on and attract employees and residents. Our solution to maximize the redevelopment is to create a public-private partnership that will only be possible if the attached proposed legislation becomes law. And I would ask for your support to help a small community have as many tools available to us to make this happen. We are a small community. We compete with Woodbury, Cottage Grove, St. Paul Park, St. Paul. So we've had 7 years of major construction with Wakota Bridge and I-494. So we're still trying to recover from that, and this is key to bringing development to our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Garrity. Ms. Taphorn, welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Melissa Taphorn. I'm the Deputy Executive Director of the Washington County HRA. And the HRA's role in this development is to attract the private development, assemble sites, and we've been working on this for 3-4 years. And the vision is to develop 60,000 square feet of commercial, office, and light industrial uses and over 460 units of various types of housing. So far, we've built the Newport Transit Station, the Washington County Regional Rail Authority accomplished that. We have express bus service into St. Paul, and this will be a stop on the future Red Rock Corridor. The first development is a housing development that will break ground in spring of 2017 for 42 units of apartments. And the redevelopment costs, relocation, demolition, site preparation, mass grading. We have some bedrock, very shallow to the surface, so we have some issues with that, which cause greater costs. And then the installation of public utilities, streets, and sidewalks exceed the value of the property there, and so this is prompting the need for TIF. The bill before you requests flexibility in the tax increment requirements. So developable parcels will require the consolidation of parcels. We have multiple small parcels there, so in order to get something that meets the vision, we're going to have to acquire from, 10 different parcel owners. And that's going to take the HRA up to 10 years to acquire enough contiguous parcels for a developable site and another 2 or 3 years for a private developer to really complete their redevelopment. The bill also requests flexibility in determining the eligibility of those parcels. This part of the bill is also necessary as a result of the phasing and the intent to create multiple districts within that project area. Depending on how future development occurs, it's possible that some parcels within each individual district will not be eligible for inclusion in the redevelopment TIF district, according to the act as written. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taphorn. Questions, members, for either Mayor Garrity or Ms. Taphorn or Representative Schoen? Okay. Anyone else who would like to testify about this bill? Representative Schoen, any closing comments?
Yeah, thank you for your time, Mr. Chair. And I'll just tell you, you know, Newport, the border of Newport is St. Paul. And it's a small community right up against, you know, a tier one city that they even St. Paul Fire has to drive into Newport to access some of the properties within St. Paul if they need to deal with it in one of their industrial areas. So that's a true story. So that is really how close this is and how difficult it is for a community the size of Newport and in my district that does need a little bit of an assist in a way of helping encourage the private sector to come in and do the things. And if you've never driven down Highway 61 on the way back to beautiful Mazeppa, you know, I suggest you should. And you can come through and see what Highway 61, when the project was done, he's not joking, when Newport really is slowly making that comeback. And I'll take you over to the Cloverleaf, and we'll have a cold one, and then we'll go and I'll show you the area, and we can do that yet tonight if you like.
So. Are you going to drive after that moment?
We're getting a ride. I'll get us an Uber or a cab.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
And I'll arrange to have someone drive us. And in fact, if it's good enough, I'll make sure it's a limousine style setup where we have this partition. We'll take a box of beer with us and we'll check it out. Because it's totally legal then. Oh. Totally legal.
Mayor Garrity, do you have a box of beer in the front?
Oh, I was going to say, Mr. Chair, I'd like to join the party, I guess. Well, I would invite you to Tanucci's restaurant as well.
I've been to Tanucci's. Thank you for nourishing us there.
And that's not bribery.
Representative Schoen, Mayor Garrity, and Ms. Taphorn, it's been a pleasure. Thank you. And with that, the chair does lay over House File 2765. Yeah, the suggestion has been made. Maybe that'd be a committee trip, members. But Representative Schoen, you got to have the box of beer.
You don't worry about that.
Okay, Representative Bly in House File 3654. Representative Simonson moves House File 3654 to then be laid over. Representative Bly, welcome.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. The bill before you, well, let me say I have some handouts I was going to send around.
You don't have steak and beer like Representative Schoen.
No, I'm sorry, I don't. But perhaps perhaps at some point after the project is all done, we could have you down. So this bill addresses an issue that really is a result of the recession. We had a development in Northfield in 2007, and the built a something called the Commons, which is some condominiums and business sites for folks. And the developer went bankrupt, and it's been difficult to move forward with this stretch of property, although the condominiums did get built, and I believe most of them are occupied at this point. But there was a TIF established, and we have an opportunity to bring in a hotel, I believe, and that's part of the reason for why we want to have an extension to be able to take advantage of some more development and kind of really complete the recovery of the recession. And I did bring some city staff people to talk about the issue, and I'd like to have them testify.
Thank you, Representative Bly. Mr. Heineman, good to see you again. Please please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Jaskowski. Good to be here. Members of the committee, I would like to just provide a brief summary of the... I'm Chris Heineman, Community Planning and Development Director for the City of Northfield. And this proposed extension, House File 3654, is an extension of the five-year rule, and in this case it would be an extension of the 10-year rule to allow for additional increment to be utilized within this district. I would characterize this redevelopment TIF district as a classic redevelopment project. It involved 21, the assembly and acquisition of 21 parcels in a very blighted area, but also a gateway area on the north side of the city of Northfield, just in the north end of the downtown area, right along Highway 3 and right along the Cannon River. The assembly of these parcels began in the late 90s, actually in about 97. It took about 7-8 years to pull those parcels together with the city and the EDA working together, and finally, after selection of a developer, the final remaining parcels were acquired by the developer themselves. Unfortunately, as Representative Bly mentioned, the project came forward at the worst possible time for a project to be breaking ground. In the TIF district was approved in 2006. The project was initiated in 2007, and as you know, the recession hit shortly thereafter. The good news on the actual redevelopment project is it was a $36.5 million condominium housing project associated with another $19 million commercial and retail project that was approved as part of a planned unit development. The first phase of that project did move forward. The 5.3 million was the retail commercial aspect. The first phase of the project that did move forward was approximately 19.9 million. So a condominium housing development that's fully developed is now in place, as well as a commercial development fully producing tax revenue for the city, county, and school district also in place. But the remaining pads on this in this district are vacant and have not been able to move forward with development since the initial district was formed. Being that the city of Northfield is outside the seven county metro area, I think the recovery from the recession has just taken substantially more time, and we are finally at the point of seeing the remainder of the site go into development. And we do have a proposed project coming forward. The first step in that is one of the remaining parcels. We have actually five parcels remaining vacant on the site. One of those parcels, the largest of those, right along the Cannon River, is slated for development of a hotel project, an 80-key hotel. It would be a regional impact, also in addition to the property taxes that it would produce on the estimated $12.8 million project. It would also bring sales tax and lodging tax to the area, so it's the type of a gateway project that is truly a positive regional impact for the area. And being able to utilize the potential TIF increment from the additional parcels going forward in 3 years is essential to developing the remainder of the site. The staging and development plans that are being proposed are well along the way. We actually have a Zoning Board of Adjustment hearing on a few variances that need to take place tomorrow evening, and then the actual purchase of the land is anticipated by the end of May. So phase one of that hotel is anticipated in the coming months, but the district itself, that the five-year rule is slated to expire on July 12th of 2016. So we're seeking that extension of the five-year rule to assist with the remainder of this development.
Thank you, Mr. Heineman. Kester. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself and ensure your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Scott Kester, and I'm with the development group Rebound Hospitality and the lead developer for this proposed project in Northfield. Rebound Hospitality is headquartered in Northfield. That's where our offices are. Rebound Hospitality is a boutique historic hotel owner and operator. We have the Archer House in Northfield, the Hotel Winnesheek in Decorah, Iowa, the Deluxe in Des Moines. We have a resort community north of Nisswa and a historical rehab building in Faribault. This is actually our second flag hotel development. We are doing a very similar project in Decorah, where we are redeveloping an old hotel site for a Fairfield Inn and Suites and two commercial pads there as well. We're actually hoping to break ground on that project in June. What we're proposing, and we did hand out a little handout, and I won't go through it page by page, but if you go to the second page, maybe I can walk you through the actual site that we're talking about. This is the site in two of the pads that Mr. Heineman had referenced, but our hotel, we're looking to site along the river, and that's the one that we're moving forward with the Zoning Board of Adjustments ahead of time. And then the two commercial pads, which we our intent is to develop those in 2017-18 future as we develop users and things like that. Our intent is to then redevelop those two pads along Highway 3. The tax increment component is very important to this project. This site is not without its challenges. The site's very tight, and for hotel developments, we need to have parking. People want to be able to drive and park their cars. So what, in order to accommodate the parking, we're actually having to build a parking garage, parking plaza, so underground parking, which increased the costs. We're dealing with floodplain issues. We have soil conditions that their soils need to be corrected. So we have to increase the cost for our structural work. And just accommodating those things are what are really helping being able to tap into the tax increment component for that. Like I said, we're hoping to be under construction in 2016 for this project, but our master plan to do the remaining development will take another couple of years, and so we really support the opportunity to extend the TIF legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Kester. Questions, members? Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. To either of the testifiers, will this extension affect any of the properties currently on the site that are paying taxes now?
Mr. Heineman.
Chair and Representative Anderson, the existing parcels that are paying taxes are under, they have a minimum assessment agreement. The only impact is that these parcels will be pulled out of the that they're currently paying on bare land towards the notes that are associated with the development. There is enough increment and revenue from the existing development to pay back the note, and then the new increment, any new increment on future projects, will be going towards the new pay-as-you-go note. So the minor amount of property taxes from the existing bare land is the only reduction from that amount.
Thank you. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for staff, maybe Mr. Michael. Regarding the TIF law, is it the CI property tax portion that would trigger the necessity for cities to come in for the legislature to have a bill passed to incorporate a TIF district? What triggers that particularly? I think it was the CI, but I could be wrong.
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McDonald, basically general law authorizes cities to create tax increment districts on their own, and so there's no requirement for special legislation, and there are about 2,000 TIF districts in the state. And 900 of those, 1,900 or more of those are created under the general law with no exceptions. So basically what happens is, in this instance, the city and the developer are coming to the legislature. There are many, many restrictions in the general law. And the restriction that they're asking for an exception from here is that there's a time limit that applies, that restricts how long the development authority, the city, has to expend monies for the initial development. And that rule, as they've outlined, is normally 5 years after certification. So the development authority is required by general law to essentially do the what's called the in-district part of the development within 5 years. As the testifiers have pointed out, because of the Great Recession, the legislature changed that rule as a general matter for every district that was created within a window of time. And you'll hear this when Representative Whalen's bill comes up, too, because she's got a similar thing. The legislature extended that for 10 years for certain districts, and then later, again, because the Great Recession was going on for a long time, to 8 years for another category of districts. The city of Northfield now is coming in and saying 10 years is too short. We need 3 more years in order to complete this in-district component of the development. And so that's why they're here. There's not, you know, like I said, 99% or 95%+ of districts are just created under the general law and follow through under all, you know, under those rules. They only come here when they somehow want to deviate from that and are asking the legislature to enact legislation related to a specific district or city.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Representative McDonald?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Michael. Yeah, because when I was mayor of Delano, we had several TIF districts, and you know what it brings to the community. It's great development and economic activity, and it's in a way, it's a shame that you have to come to the legislature and your project is dependent on us down here. You can see by the handout the millions of dollars that it'll bring to the community. And I don't recall that we ever, in Delano, when I was active, that had to come and have special legislation. So I was just curious on that. So thank you for that, Mr. Michaels. And maybe there's something that we can do to not have these projects dependent on the legislature, but that's for another debate. But I just will feel your pain in a way. The city of Delano, when I was on the council, also incorporated in 2006 a land across the street from my studio and built an 8-unit town home condominium and a commercial space. And sure enough, soon as we, you know, with our gold shovels and the picture taken, you know, put the shovels into the
picture.
Well, I was in the picture. I didn't take them. Or little trick photography. Sure enough, as soon as that Sunday paper or the Monday paper came around with that photograph, the recession hit, and boy, it was painful. But all the units sold, and they're filled, and it's successful, and it brought vitality and income and activity downtown. So I understand and certainly support this measurement. But I think in the future we should look at, Chair, you and I, some projects that they're not dependent on the state for extension.
So just remove all the rules, Representative McDonald?
Sounds good, yes. Not all.
Okay. Thank you, Representative McDonald. Other questions, members? Okay. Closing thoughts, Representative Bly?
Well, thank you, Chair.
Before you do, Representative Bly, anybody else would like to testify about this bill? I assume there is not, but Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair. And I think as you can see by the handout, this is a very positive project. And hopefully in a couple of years, some of you may want to wander down to Northfield and stay at the hotel and take advantage of our Riverwalk Arts Fair and Farmers Market. It happens every Saturday morning. And we also have, as you know, the Defeat of Jesse James Days, which happens in September, early September, which is a great event. And hopefully you might come to that. We also have every 3 years a international band festival. Have bands coming from all over the world to play in Northfield. So there's plenty of reasons to come to Northfield. We just need a few more bedrooms for people to be able to stay at.
Thank you, Representative Bly. Thank you, Mr. Heineman, Mr. Kester. And with that, the chair lays over House File 3654. Representative Straczynski, House File 2755. Oh, okay. He's waiting on some folks, so Representative Whalen will bring House File 3525, and she moves House File 3525 to be considered and then laid over. Representative Whalen, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I have House File 3525 before you, and I do have an amendment that is simply to make it match its Senate companion.
Okay. Representative Whalen moves the A1 amendment to House File 3525. Representative Whalen, the amendment.
Yes, it's just changing the date from the 30th to the 29th.
Okay. Discussion on the amendment, members? Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The amendment is adopted. Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to take too much of the committee's time. It's a fairly simple bill, and I have a couple of folks here from the city of Anoka that will speak more to the bill.
Thank you. Welcome. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Whalen. My name is Lori Yeager. I'm the City Finance Director for the City of Anoka, and with me is Brenda Smith. She's a senior accountant. Today we were just asking for an amendment to the date of our certification for our Greens of Anoka, TIF District in Anoka. We were certified on July 2nd of 2012, and to be included in the 8-year rule that we had mentioned earlier about having the district extended from 5 years to 8 years, all we would need is a certification on June 29th. The purpose of actually asking for this is that we are doing a reliever road in that district, relieving the traffic off of Highway 10 to go from Main Street over to Thurston Avenue. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Anoka, but Highway 10 traffic is horrendous, and we have enough TIF to do a portion of the road, but we feel if we have 3 more years, our development will complete, and we'll have enough TIF to do the rest of the road that we're looking at doing for Highway 10 reliever.
Thank you, Ms. Yeager. Mm-hmm. Ms. Smith, welcome. Please introduce yourself and provide your testimony.
I'm Brenda Smith. I'm just here as a support for Lori. I really don't have much to add, but this would be a great benefit to both, as she said, Highway 10 and the project going through there and the reconstruction and getting our road completed in that district.
Thank you. Questions, members? Representative Whalen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'd ask for your support.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Whalen, Ms. Yeager, and Ms. Smith. I hope you're able to navigate that Highway 10 on the way home.
Yes.
With that, the Chair does lay over House File 3525. Representative Swazinski is next with House File 2755, which is moved by Representative McDonald, moves House File 2755 to then be laid over. Representative Swazinski, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I appreciate the opportunity to come before the Property Tax Division of the Tax Committee. House File 2755 is being brought forward for you on behalf of the City of Canby. City of Canby is out in Yellow Medicine County along the western edge of the state, just an 8 miles short of the South Dakota border. I've got Nick Johnson here with us this morning. He is a city administrator for the city of Canby to kind of talk a little bit about the bill. This is probably a little more of a unique ask when it comes to TIF districts before this committee. Nick Johnson, you want to just introduce yourself and we can talk a little bit about the
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Welcome. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair and Committee. My name is Nicholas Johnson, and I work as the City Administrator for the City of Canby out in southwest Minnesota. Apologize in advance. I'm not sick anymore, but I have this lingering cough that may interfere just a little bit. So thank you for bearing with me.
You bet.
We're coming here with the bill to establish a TIF district that was first certified in 2004. This was when I was I would have been a sophomore in college at this point. What happened, this was a housing TIF district, and it was slated to have 12 houses built out here, but then we had the housing crisis happen, and only 4 houses ended up being built in that area. This was not enough to pay the annual debt service on the tax increment financing bond, which was floated for this project. And since it was a general obligation tax increment financing bond, the city's general fund had to go ahead and cover the payment since there wasn't enough TIF being generated. All said and done, in 2011, to save costs on interest, the city decided to call the bond and pay it off. We saved about $12,000 in interest that way. But at that point, we had spent from the general fund approximately $232,000 over those years. So what we're looking to do is recoup those costs, establish a TIF district in the same CLAP edition, and then have that pay back the general fund and then defease it immediately.
Okay, questions, members? Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. About what the county and school district, are they in support of this?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you. Representative, yes, they are in support of it. Canby has used quite a bit of TIF in its history, and the county and the school district have always been supportive of their actions. We have very good working relationships.
Representative Dabney.
Representative Pinto asked my question. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Other questions, members? Anyone else who would like to testify on this bill? Okay. Representative Swierczynski, if you want to give the closing comments, and we can keep moving.
Thank you, Chair Drazkowski. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Representative Swierczynski and Mr. Johnson. With that, the chair lays over House File 2755.
Thank you.
Thank you, and would the author have an opening statement and wish to move his bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would move House File 3758 to be laid over.
Did you have testifiers that wish to?
I think there are a variety of testifiers, Mr. Chair. Let's describe the bill, if I could, first. And Mr. Michael's going to help me with this, I'm sure. Just essentially what we have is the state auditor has made an interpretation about this part of TIF statute that provides limitations on how, and Mr. Michael's going to do this the right way when he talks about it, but cities are interpreting the statute to mean that they can actually use some of the money later for other purposes, and this is more of a confining or maybe original intent type of amendment, if you will, I think, to kind of bring it back in conformance not only with what it seems was originally intended, but also what the state auditor has recommended in her report. So I'd defer, Mr. Chair, if I could, to Mr. Michael to give you the specifics.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. So it's a transparency and truth to the taxpayer type statement. Mr. Michaels.
Mr. Chairman, members of the division, what this bill does is it makes modifications in how what the state auditor refers to as the six-year rule under the tax increment statute. Before, when we were talking about Representative Whalen's bill and Representative Bly's bill, we were talking about the five-year rule. There's a rule in the tax increment law that creates a five-year time limit, and it says that certain activities must be completed within that 5 years. And then after that period has expired, this statute that the chair's bill is amending takes effect. And it says, and it essentially limits how increments can be used in year six through the end of the district. Mm-hmm. And the issue here is how do you, and to complete the discussion of this, there are two streams of increment for every district. There's the amount that can be spent only on activities in the district, the in-district percent, and then there's the pooling percentage. Those percentages typically for most districts are 80% for in-district activities and 20% for pooling. For redevelopment districts, it's 75 and 25. So the issue becomes in year six through the end of the district, how do you apply that percentage limit? The statute says has a calculation that compares two amounts, and then you apply the percentage. And the issue is whether or not you apply that percentage to the increments for that year and the expenditures for that year, which is the statement of position that the auditor has put out, or whether you go back and you look at the cumulative amounts up until that year. And what the chair's bill does is to, the state auditor approached us and said, look, there's a dispute. Some cities are not reading the statute the way we are and are using the cumulative amount rather than the annual amount. We would like to have this resolved. This isn't the state auditor's bill, but they just want the statute clarified so that it's treated consistently for all cities. And what this bill does is to make the statute consistent with the state auditor's position. I think you'll hear people testify who say, look, we've been doing it with the cumulative amount, and that's the only way that we can capture the full 20% or 25% to use outside the district. And so that's the issue that the committee needs to face. Do you want to resolve the do you want to resolve this ambiguity in the statute to make it consistent with the auditor's position statement, or alternatively, we could draft an amendment to the statute to make it consistent with the way some of the cities have been doing it, to say, look, when we get to year six, we'll go back and look at years one through five in addition to year six, seven, or whatever appropriate year it is, and see if we have additional revenues that we can spend outside the district. And the practical effect of this will be that if you go with the chair's bill, it will constrain or limit the amount that can be spent on activities outside of the district, so on other public infrastructure, other development activities beyond the sort of focused original purpose of that district.
Members, are there? Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a interesting juxtaposition to the earlier call in the committee hearing that we should get rid of rules. We're adding more rules, and we're tightening the rules. Question for Mr. Michael, Mr. Chair. Earlier, you'd also indicated there are about 2,000 TIF districts across the state, most of which haven't had to come to the legislature to be established. Do we know how many of those districts would be affected by this change in interpretation?
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dabney, I do not know that one. One of the impetuses for this is that the law was amended a couple of years back that enabled the state auditor to implement a new reporting method that allowed them to then look at and complying with this rule before that, because increment and non-increment revenues, all of these authorities have both increment revenues and non-increment revenues, and these restrictions only apply to increment revenues, and it was not possible for them to track that. It was at that point they discovered that, most cities, the way it was characterized to me, most cities or most districts were following the rules the way they interpret them, but there are some that they discovered were not, which is why they put out the position statement. They didn't tell me, and I don't even know if they know, what the percentages are, and of course, many sort of simple districts never, engage in this kind of activity. They just want to complete a development. They do it, and they use the increments to do that development in the district, and never, all they want to do is decertify it and get it back on the tax rolls as quickly as possible, as opposed to making sure they can get the 20 or the 25% for these, out-of-district activities.
Thank you.
Follow-up, Chair.
No, thank you.
Any other questions from members? And I think it, instead of imposing rules, it's the clarification for an ambiguity that may be available. So, Representative Daphne.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the different interpretation, but it is saying to cities that have presumably in good faith been understanding and the statute and proceeding accordingly, because I understand this to be retroactive, not just future looking. It is then essentially saying you've been in good faith following the statute. We're now imposing a different interpretation of the statute that is going to impact the planning and expenditures that you've already been incurring and anticipating, and maybe have signed contracts related to. So it's clarification if it's only going forward. It's layering on and changing rules if it's also back-looking, I would argue.
Thank you, Representative Daphne, and I thank you for the clarification. You agree with clarification, but you don't want to backdate and retro. Representative Yuki.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question for Mr. Michael then, too, just so I understand, because when you say activities outside the district, it sounds so ominous, but it could be as simple as right outside the district you have a road that you need to connect or an intersection that you need to update so that the development functions with traffic flow. Could it be things like that?
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, that Representative Joachim, yes, that it is true that depending upon where you draw the district lines, and of course, where you draw the district lines for redevelopment districts, as we were talking about, that oftentimes will be influenced by wanting to meet the blight test. But yes, a road that's outside the district will not be, you will have to use the pooling percentage increments to pay for that. Just to clarify about whether this is retroactive or not, it applies to increments that are used after December 31st of last year. So there is an element of retroactivity to this, and I think some people perceive that, it's retroactive because it applies to existing districts, but it only applies to uses of increment after December 31st of last year. You could move that date farther, but if you I think the challenge that you will have if you exempt existing districts from it is that then the auditor would have to go on with two sets of rules, one for old districts and one for new districts. And cities who have been following the auditor's rule with regard to how to treat this could then switch to the more generous rule that allows pooling. So that's sort of the trade-offs that you'll have to make in thinking about if you want to do this, whether it should be, you know, all districts but new uses of increments or just new districts.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I want to ask a follow-up question to Mr. Michael then. The date of December 31st, 2015 seems like it's a fairly arbitrary date. I guess I'm wondering why the date couldn't simply be set to, you know, date after this would become law, and sort of what the advantage, since it's since there is simply a date that's chosen that's sort of a couple months ago, why not just choose a date that is right after the this becomes law, and that at least gives some warning to the communities involved.
Well, included in that, if Mr. Michael could enlighten us on how the calendar year versus fiscal year, and if we chose 2 days after this is enacted, it's still in the middle of the year, and it would just allow for the complete year. Mr. Michael, if you can clarify.
Mr. Chairman, members of the division, the chair's point is the reason why that was picked. It was the idea was that since cities fiscal years and reporting for increment districts is on a calendar year basis, that we didn't want to split a calendar year so that you would have one rule that applies for part of the year and another rule for another part of the year. But, I mean, that's not an insurmountable thing. It was just sort of a convenience. You could certainly make it you know, July 1st, or you could, you know, move it to December 31st of 2016 and then give them, you know, 8 months or 6 months or whatever, you know, whenever this, if this were enacted, that whatever additional period of time to adjust to it.
Follow-up. I'm Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, because I suppose in theory it could be set at December 31st of 2016, and then you've got, then, you know, enacted law, then you've got the simplicity of that, et cetera. But I have a question. So I'm looking at the auditor's position statement that's referenced, because I understand the argument is that this is something which, you know, the auditor already took this position back in 2014. It seems, as I look at the position statement, it seems kind of buried in the middle of it. And I'm just wondering, and I don't know if Chair Drazkowski knows, kind of how much the auditor's position statement was publicized to communities. Is this something where, like, they would have known in 2014 the auditor's been saying this, and then there's been a change, or that they need to change their conduct? Or I'm just wondering about that, because it really isn't highlighted in the position statement itself.
Thank you, Representative Pinto, for pointing out the possibility that the auditor may not be communicating to the cities, and maybe the author can clarify.
I will just, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pinto, I'll just add the auditor has published this report, and it might be an annual one, Mr. Michael. The Tax Increment Financing Legislative Report, year ended December 31st, 2014. And I assume it's in here. I haven't read it in its entirety, Mr. Michael, but maybe Mr. Michael could address that.
Michael.
Mr. Chair, remember, the auditor puts out a monthly newsletter that's emailed to everybody who's on their list. I know I'm on their list. I suspect most of the cities that are active in tax increment are on their list. And that email notifies generally people about new position statements. I don't remember, you know, whether it was highlighted, you know, to what extent this was highlighted. I know that the auditor's staff told Senate staff and me that when we met with them that they had, you know, met with cities, you know, going forward once they discovered this inconsistency with selected ones before putting out the 2014, you know, change in their position statement. But I, Representative Pinto, I just don't know to what extent they've, you know, made it very clear or publicized it to people. There, undoubtedly, there are some cities that did not, that this, you know, was not on their radar.
Follow up, Representative Pinto.
Mr. Chair, just to comment, just at a glance, the position statement itself seems quite clear and well written. It's just a matter of there's a bunch of things in here, so I don't know if that particular thing might have been called out. I want to make sure to defend the auditor's office in that way from what you said. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you. I would just have a question for Mr. Michael. Is there any downside to doing, say, December 31st of 2016? Is there any complications that presents?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, no. I think, you know, the only argument against it would be that then you have another year of sort of inconsistency for the cities that have been following the one rule versus the other. But I think that's certainly a fine way to resolve this.
Thank you.
Representative Drazkowski, if there are, would this be a good time to bring
Mr.
down
Chair,
the testifiers?
I don't believe there may be somebody here to testify in favor, but there's a number testifying against. So I would maybe just call them up. I think we've got them on the agenda list.
Okay. If you're present, Mr. Carlson, Mr. Schneider, Ms. Mihalik, Mr. Faust, and Ms. Bolton, if you could, when you come to the table and the microphone, if you can state your name and association, and please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. When this bill was introduced, I circulated it quickly to a number of our cities because it says in the title that it's a clarification, and so I wasn't aware. I'm not a TIF expert, and I wasn't aware if it was a clarification or something more than that. We looked at the 8 words that are deleted and the, I think, 20 words that are added, and I got a lot of calls from cities that expressed very severe concern with what this bill would mean to some of their existing TIF projects. Let me be clear that
under either interpretation, there's a 25% limit on pooling. There's no way you can go above that. The question is whether you do this calculation annually, as the auditor has suggested, or cumulatively for the district. So today I thought I would invite a few of our city officials that have dealt with the law, that are very knowledgeable in tax increment financing, to share their individual experiences and help you understand more of what this means to projects within their cities. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Mayor Terry Schneider from the City of Minnetonka, and I do have a handout for him that we could share with you.
And Mayor Schneider, if you could state your name and association, and staff will take care of the handout.
Thank you. Terry Schneider, Mayor of Minnetonka, and I don't want to be characterized as a TIF expert. We sit on the council and make our best decision based on advice of what feels a very qualified staff, and typically almost every time we do a TIF district or any kind of interaction with TIF districts, we hire a major TIF consulting firm that really advises us on the intricacies of exactly how it works, not just the economics, but also the practicality of how to interpret state statute and so forth. So we rely on their expertise and move forward with that. The reason that this raises concern, and again, the question is whether the auditor is trying to interpret statute based on some benefits to them versus actually what the practice is and what it should be. So to me, it should be up to the legislature to decide what's the right approach for this and then clarify that, and that would be helpful for all cities. We have, in Minnetonka, we've had a challenge providing affordable housing in our city. It's a fairly high land-valued city. We're generally fully developed, but we know we have a huge need for providing affordable housing and workforce housing in our city. But the tools we have are pretty limited. We did adopt an HRA, and we provide some public tax funds for that. But tax increment ended up with this kind of a pooling concept, ending up being really our only tool that we could use to attract quality affordable housing developers to our city because of some of the difficulties of doing redevelopment and or improvements to based on the high land values and the challenge of doing affordable housing. The biggest issue in this, doing it annually versus some kind of accumulating effort, is that anytime you do an affordable housing project in a community like ours, and probably many, many others, they're very complex, they're very time-consuming, there are multiple agencies that all have to align their funding sources to make it happen. The two examples that I passed out, one is a 64-unit apartment building that was done by affordable housing developer close to the Ridgedale area, and $1.5 million worth of TIF, but that was just a small component of other funding sources from Met Council, from MFHA, some philanthropic, and also a developer that really had this as part of their mission. So everybody needs to line up their dollars and say, we're going to commit this much to make this happen and make that work. And sometimes it can take 3, 4, or 5 years to actually get all that to happen, all the approvals, all the funding sources together, and then the construction to take place before you can actually get some increment back. So if we ended up having to, and we have done the cumulative approach, saying, you know, within the limits of the statute, here's how we can use that to attract the kind of projects that we would like to see in our city. This is an example we approved in 2013. We have one underway that's a 27-unit affordable housing apartment project that would happen if, in fact, everybody aligns and they get all their final funding and all the approvals in place, but we need to do that. So if we're limited to saying, well, we can only use X dollars this year and then it expires, we can't use it anymore, we don't have the ability to pledge the kind of dollars and or the timing that it takes to get these projects to happen. So in reality, if this interpretation was made to really totally restrict it, it would virtually eliminate that ability to use TIF pooling for affordable housing in Minnetonka. And we think that would be a disservice to our citizens and to the residents who would like to be living in these facilities.
Thank you, Mayor. Next testifier, is it Mihelic?
You had it right the first time. Good morning. I'm Kathy Mihelic. I'm the Director of Economic Development for the City of St. Cloud. I also bring with me the
about 20 years of experience working with other greater Minnesota communities, including Olivia, Newland and Spicer, and Elk River, in which those communities I worked in administering tax at several tax increment financing districts. The point I bring today is that this issue also affects greater Minnesota communities, of which I represent with the City of St. Cloud. We're an urban regional center with aging infrastructure, particularly in our core downtown. And the challenge we have is financing those public improvements. Estimates on St. Cloud's 8 affected TIF districts under this language indicates negative impact of $200,000 to $400,000 over the life of those districts alone. Pooled funds, if and when they're available, and oftentimes they're not, oftentimes there's barely enough increment to pay the bond obligations, so it's rare that there's much accumulated after that fact. But as they're collected on a cumulative basis, much like a TIF budget is established based off of a cumulative projection of what's available in tax increment, bonds are issued based off of a cumulative projection of tax increment financing. But those pooling dollars are expended under the existing limits, and eligible uses for redevelopment, acquisition, demolition, environmental remediation, other public infrastructure costs. And to apply this policy now on an annual basis, the example in one of our districts alone, it would generate roughly $5,000 on an annual basis. As many of you know from your previous city experiences, that's insufficient really to pledge towards any public improvement project. And so it also hinders the flexibility for cities to account for changes in the economy and recession that happen to these districts over time, particularly after that five-year rule. As you're hearing, several communities come forward today with special legislation requests to allow for that flexibility. Under the TIF pooling, we'd be able to have more flexibility to, within the districts alone, to utilize those dollars. With that, again, I'd like to stress that this language does affect greater Minnesota's and Minnesota communities in addition to metro area communities. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Before we go to the next testifier, I heard $200,000 would be lost if we went to this. And I didn't see a change in the percent of being utilized, so that seems a little confusing. And then how long is this TIF district if it's 5K annual and you're losing $200,000? That seems to come up with quite a few years, if you could maybe enlighten the examples you used.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for clarification, the $200,000 to $400,000 impact is calculated over 8 tax increment financing districts that are affected by this law, post-1990 districts. All of them are redevelopment districts, which can go for 25 years, or renewal and renovation districts, which I believe go until 20 years. So that's where that dollar amount is factored. The $5,000 figure that I quoted is based off of the increment that would be available under pooling in one calendar year on one tax increment district.
So if I'm doing the math and assuming that using the low end at the 5K times 8, that means the floor is 40K annual, which would mean within 10 years you would. I think what we need to keep in mind is this doesn't change a percentage. It's more of an accounting and a cash flow statement. And I'm assuming that if we can go on to the next testifier, Mayor Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Jerry Faust. I'm the mayor of St. Anthony Village. Nestled between St. Paul and Minneapolis, confined some people, we would say, but we're happy where we're at. Thank you for the opportunity for letting us speak here today. I'm not going to say anything other than I will share an experience from the perspective of our city on what this would do. I agree with the mayor and the representative from St. Cloud. We're really speaking on behalf of the 853 cities in the state of Minnesota. And I'm pleased to see a number of former elected officials here, local elected officials, and I think you understand it. I think the term pooling maybe has bad connotations, and maybe we ought to just kind of rename that, because that sounds like something that is akin to a slush fund, and it's not. It's things that need to be done. You heard outside a district, semaphores in a metro area and an intersection are quite expensive, and $5,000 doesn't get it these days, so you have to get it a little bit longer. But let me just talk about St. Anthony Village, if I will. 1984, we had a tornado at Apache Plaza. And for those of you who understand or remember that, this is 2016. We still haven't finished that whole project. In between, we've had a couple of recessions, 2000, 2001, and then again, obviously, what we call the Great Recession. So when you talk about redeveloping 53 acres in an inner city, inner ring suburb of the cities, you really have a real challenge when you come to land assemblage, property assemblages, and then getting the developers and getting the right mix of what you need. And that all takes time. And time, in most cases, is not on the side as this legislation is written. And I think would have a negative impact in us being able to do long-range planning. I would also tell you that cities are very sensitive to the schools and counties that they work with. They realize that when they do something in TIF, that increment, they haven't taken anything away, but the counties and schools still have yet to capture any of that new increment or that new taxes. And we strive very hard to get those off the tax increment finance rolls and back on the total tax rolls. I talked to a lot of mayors, and I know of none who use this as, I hate to use the word, as a slush fund, but they use it for economic redevelopment. So I would ask you to think about this. I certainly hate to cast aspersions on any elected officials, but maybe we need to take a pause and rethink this and do a little bit more study on it so we actually know what, in fact, the implications are with the 2,000 TIF districts, which I didn't know were out there. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you. And members, if we have two more people on the list to testify, and then we will get to questions. Ms. Bolton? And if Mr. Schroeder would get position, go ahead and state your name and affiliation.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jenny Bolton. I'm an attorney with Kennedy and Graven. I actually came today just to be here for technical questions and to help answer questions for the testifiers earlier. I would say that, mathematically, 25% of a sum of numbers is the same as 25% of each of those numbers added together. So this isn't more money. It's only a flexibility question and a planning question for those districts who haven't set that money aside in each year. The effective date rule does have an impact because it means that those who have planned to use it sort of in a expanding towards the end of the district as you're sort of meeting the end of those in-district expenditures, if they can't continue those plans that they've already put in place because this applies to the receipt of increments in the coming years for the remaining duration of those districts, it does have an impact on the way that the effective date is written right now. And then also going forward, if this were put in place, it does reduce that flexibility, as you heard from some of the testifiers. These expenses don't happen in little drips each year. They happen, you have a big chunk of a cost, and then you have to pay for it as the revenues come in over time. And when we talk about pooling, we're not just talking about things that are other places, pooling is not just a physical limitation. It is this five-year limitation. It's any expense that could come up in the physical boundaries after that five-year duration. So it's that flexibility of working with that timing. So the timing and flexibility is a key component here.
Okay, if you could stay at the table, there is a question for you. But our last testifier, if you could come to the table and state your name and affiliation.
Certainly. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeremy Schrader, and I am the policy director for the Minnesota Housing Partnership. Well, we're a team of developers, researchers, policy advocates who drive efforts to secure policies and funding needed for regional, state, and federal level on those levels to advance local housing. I'm here today to oppose House File 3758 because it would have disastrous effects on the current and future development of affordable housing. You've heard from the cities already. We oppose it for many of the same reasons, but we also want to talk a little bit from the side of the developers, that they also need this type of flexibility, that this elimination of pooling would eliminate many of the funds they need to complete these projects, to make these projects viable throughout all of Minnesota. Again, I said it would be brief, and I'm going to hold myself to that, but many of you know the growing housing need we have in Minnesota, and this bill would limit developers of what they're able to do. Thank you very much, and I'll stay for any questions.
Thank you. And Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe this question would be best addressed to Ms. Bolton. Could you talk a little bit about how setting the date of any tax increment that was certified after April 30th, 1990 would also affect that long-range planning that cities could do around that money?
Right.
Ms. Bolton.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, so many districts have, and we don't have a quantified number of that. I mean, when we say many or some or most, we don't know that number. This only affects those districts that use pooling. But for those districts that do use their pooling capacity, they adopt a tax increment financing plan at the beginning of a 25-year period or 15-year or whatever is applicable for that district. They make projections about the amount of development that will occur in that area. When we're talking about the districts that use this most, it is these multi-parcel redevelopment projects that have different parcels that become available for increment for development at different times. They might economically it might not make sense to develop at the beginning of that within that 5-year window, and so there have to be plans and expectations made. Cities are certainly very cautious in terms of issuing bonds, and so where they might use pooling is to issue bonds after that 5-year window when some development has already occurred, and so it would be a pooled expenditure because it's after that 5-year window, but they're doing it cautiously because they're waiting to see what development has occurred during that time frame. And then just the concept of financing generally is that you're using a stream of revenue that comes in over a period of time to pay for a cost that occurs more in a lumpy fashion. It doesn't occur in each year. It occurs, you have to make your capital expenditure at one point and then pay for it over time. Does that help answer your question?
Follow up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, it does. Basically, what you're looking at is cities are trying to do what they can to get their best bang for their buck for their taxpayers and creating stability in a district by being able to plan further out. And the worry is that if you go back to districts that have already made these plans and have already set these plans in motion so that they can maybe decertify their districts earlier or get more development within the district done, and that maybe have to come up to the legislator for extensions, this would kind of screw that up a little bit.
We're coming close to the end. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Bolton, why are there differences in the interpretation of this six-year rule? What has caused that? Is it ambiguity in the way the law was written? Is it not listening to the intent of the debate? You as a lawyer, what have you determined would be the cause for this so we can get to the bottom of this?
Ms. Bolton.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I would say there are There is ambiguity in the way Subdivision 4 is written. I would say that the practitioners, the lawyers and TIF consultants and the communities that have used pooling have in good faith tried to work with the language of the statute, the subdivision, keeping in mind that Subdivision 2 of the statute, which has the 25%, is says of total revenues, and then the Subdivision 4 is the second part of it, the six-year rule, and our understanding of the policy behind this was in pre-90 districts, you could have a district that did not have a limitation on the amount that you used for pooling, and it did not have, you had a statutory duration for a district, but you could keep that district open after your in-district obligations were paid and just continue to accumulate revenues in that district to be able to use for pooling. And that Subdivision 4 was really trying to get at that second component of what was perceived as not the intent of, mm-hmm. of a TIF district, the primary intent. So there was this limit, 25%, and try to get your districts decertified by getting your once your in-district obligation is paid off, and don't keep it open indefinitely to continue generating more money for pooling. Subdivision 4 is dense and hard to read. There was an attempt to clarify it. It added this language about in each year. We read that differently to mean it's this difference. I certainly think there's room for clarification in Subdivision 4. I think the community agrees, you know, the community of practitioners agrees with that.
Representative Erickson?
No, that's just
Representative Anderson.
Just a quick question, Mr. Chair. Ma'am, any idea, just roughly, of the 2,000 TIF districts in operation or today, what percentage use pooling and how many don't?
Ms. Bolton.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I don't have a number. I would say, you know, if you think about all of the cities in Minnesota, not all of them use TIF. Of those that use TIF, many of them are using it for housing districts. Housing districts have different limitations. They're, you have to use all of it essentially for housing that meets the either rental housing or owner-occupied housing that meet income qualifications, and then it can be used for any other project within the project area that meets those income qualifications, not within the physical boundaries of the district. So those aren't really impacted by this. Economic development districts, it's very difficult to use pooling from those. They're just a 9-year duration, so there isn't necessarily increment from those, so that kind of carves those out. So you're really talking primarily about redevelopment tax increment financing districts, and even among those, you're talking about, you know, in many cases, in particularly in smaller communities, you're talking about a single parcel where there is a single building, and you're not using it for pooling, you're using it for that one single parcel development. So it's most impacting on those that are multi-parcel districts, or where you've got multiple districts in a city and they can take a piece from each of those and use it for the housing projects that wouldn't otherwise be eligible to use the a new TIF district for.
So, Representative Druskowski, if you had a closing statement, we have exceeded normal time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairs and members and testifiers. I think it's a very good discussion. Senator Rest has authored the companion to this bill. I think there's a desire to bring some clarity. I think this discussion was helpful, and I would just encourage people to provide any input you would have to the conferees on the tax committee should this be something that that body takes up. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Representative. And with that, we lay the bill over and we are adjourned.